Off the Ball, GAA.
Probably large aspects of our performance today that we'll have to tidy up on. Going into the semi-final, Kerry are obviously defending champions. They've found a run of form and vein of form themselves, and they're quite dominant.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I'm delighted to be joined by Olympian and co-founder of the Olympic Federation of Ireland's Dare to Believe programme, Róisín McGeadaigh-Dumas. Róisín, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Great, thanks. Lovely day.
Yeah. We're enjoying the weather. You've got the long sleeves on, but not indicative of the weather we have it outside at the moment.
No, the city's buzzing out there. It's great. It's lovely.
And before we get into the Dare to Believe programme as a whole, I suppose in order to understand what it is and what it is about, it's important to understand you as an athlete and the journey that you went on. So, I believe you went on an athletics scholarship over to Providence.
I did lots of sports growing up, but I fell in love with athletics by the time I was 11. I was like all in, probably a little bit too eager. I think it was seeing Sonia Sullivan and Katrina McKiernan like dominating the world stage was really influential, because I was like, I like to run. They're on the TV running every week. And it was just this like, you know, direct line to my motivation. And yeah, I was really into it at that point. And then, you know, the rocky teenage years crop in and it goes a bit sideways and wobbly. But luckily, my passion for the sport like kept me in it. And kind of by the time I was in transition year and fifth year, I kind of really like doubled down again. And then I earned a scholarship to Providence College in Rhode Island. I followed a teammate of mine, Stephanie O'Reilly, from Wicklow Town as well. And then, I went to Providence on a sports scholarship and was coached by Ray Tracy from Waterford there. And there was loads of Irish there, so it was brilliant, yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to like take up athletics kind of almost like on a professional basis, or like pursue it for a scholarship? Or was it more of a hobby for a lot of your youth?
It was definitely a hobby like all the other things. It was just like I grew up in Wicklow Town and there was loads of different sports happening. And so you just did whatever was available, you know. Like I was saying, seeing Irish athletes on the TV just made it like very, just made me really love the sport as well. And then, you know, but there was no expectation of like you're going to, you know, go do anything on the international stage at all. I wasn't dominating anything. So it was more, you know, yeah, if you keep going because you're pretty good at it, and then like getting a scholarship and stuff, it wasn't like, oh, this is going to guarantee that you're going to the Olympics. This is like, you get to do this with like 40, 50 boys and girls your age, which just sound like a dream come true, because none of my gang were into sports. So it was so fun to be able to be in an environment where your friends were into the same sport as you. And it was like they kind of sold me on like, you get 4 years, a degree, and you get to like have this lifestyle for 4 years. And I was like, that sounds amazing, you know? So it wasn't like, oh, you're definitely going to the Olympics at all.
Did you find the transition easy enough then? Because it's a big move. Like, what age were you? 18, 19?
Just the week I turned 19, I think. Okay. I went, yeah. I was really homesick. I think I was in bed for at least like 2 weeks crying. It was like really, yeah, it was really sad leaving. And great, great community in Wicklow and Rathnew, the villages I'm from. So it was really hard to leave, but it was like, oh, can we get to Christmas? And then after Christmas, that first year, like time just took off and it was just the years flew in. Yeah.
What did you study?
I did psychology and environmental studies. So, yeah.
Yeah, helpful as well, I'd imagine, for the years to come.
Yeah. I was kind of really interested in like people's behavior and how some people would get super nervous and then other people wouldn't. And then some people would run really well, even though they were negative, and other people were always positive, but they didn't always run well. So it just was fascinating, like what were the different factors and like how, you know, what was the mind's role in that kind of in performance as well? Because I could really see it play out in different ways.
What kind of runner were you?
I would get nervous, but if I was really stressed, it would affect my performance. But I had other friends who were like really stressed, but then they'd run amazingly well. So yeah, I think it was, I realized, yeah, everyone's just wired a bit differently. So it's like what they need. And And we can all learn from each other, I think, as well. Yeah.
The goal of the Olympics wasn't promised, but it did happen for you. You represented Ireland in Beijing in 2008.
Yeah. And interestingly, like, I had done hurdles, I was at the steeplechase, so I had done hurdles as a teenager, and then I'd moved to middle distance by the time I'd finished school, so I was more of an 1500 metre runner. And then when I was in college, the steeplechase came in for women, and my coach, Ray Tracy, just said, "You're doing it." He's like, "I know you can hurdle, and I know you can run cross country and distance." So it was kind of like, not everyone can hurdle. So, it was kind of like, yeah, an event built for me, really. And then it came in like 2 years later into Beijing for the first time, the Olympics. It was...
Just before we touch on the Olympics, what was Ray Tracy like as a coach?
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's actually just about to retire this year, which is sad for the next generation of athletes coming through. But he's amazing. And like I was just saying, like, he could tell people's wiring. Like, he knew what to say to you and he knew what to say to me, or, you know, all the different people that he worked with. And he knew what worked, what they needed to hear. And he was very good at getting the most out of athletes that way. And he's kind of like a master of the sport as well. He's like, we call him the guru, because like, he can just predict races and he just has that wealth of knowledge and information, and he can just kind of see, okay, this is probably going to happen and here's what you need to do. So that was, he's like a rock, you know, as an athlete, you're up and down like on a roller coaster, and you could always, he's always like steady and calm and like never go too high or too low. And I think people really need that grounding force as an athlete, you know, you're like, "Oh, I have a terrible race." He's like, okay, on to the next one, you know. He's like, you know, suck it up basically, and, you know, just learn to, you know, if you want to be traveling around Europe with going on to different races, you just got to get used to this and get on this roller coaster that you're on and find ways to kind of keep learning and growing from it. And he was always really good at like sitting down with you at the end of the season and kind of pulling the positives from it. So it really motivated you for the winter training, you know, and I always felt like you were moving on and growing from it. So that was really helpful.
Yeah, especially like the margin for error in athletics is, it's so small, because you just get that one shot, that one race, and like the nerves, as someone even watching a race, you know, you'd be sick to your stomach, because if you make one tiny mistake, it's you done, really, isn't it? So like, mindset must be so important. It's important for every sport, but for something like athletics where you've got one race and that's it.
Yeah, it can be quite intense, and you kind of, you're very exposed there. If you're not feeling good, or, you know, it's on you, and you kind of, especially when it comes to major championships as well, it kind of, all the other races you can do are great and everything, but to try and get that performance on the right day, you know, it's there's an art to that, I think, and it's not always a lock, you know. For various reasons, I think. Yeah.
Did it help having Ray over in America, like as a fellow Irish person? Because I'd imagine I might be completely making this up now, but would an American coach's approach be a little bit different? You know, would it be a little bit harder, a little bit brasher?
I don't know. I can't really speak to that. But no, definitely Ray understood the kind of, coming from Ireland, and, you know,
like the real self-depreciating nature of us almost.
Yeah, but we were like a little bit green. We were like, "Oh, just come for a walk down the road." Like, you know, these cities where you go for a race and you're just like, "Oh, I'm just going to go around here." And he's like, "No, you're not." You know, like, get in the car, like, meet us at the bus, or like, you have to, you know, realize that you're not in Wicklow anymore, you know, in certain places that we'd go to visit. And just even like the chats you want to talk about, "Oh, our chocolate's better than your chocolate," and all that kind of stuff. You just like, all right.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Takes it home a little bit.
Yeah. He's up for that kind of banter. Sometimes you need it just to talk about things from home as well, you know.
To take it forward then to the Olympics in Beijing.
Yeah.
You qualify for the final.
Yeah.
The 3,000 meter steeplechase.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't go to plan in the final.
No. I think I had this like yin and yang experience there, where like the semi-final was like dream come true. I was like floating around the track feeling like, is this real life? Like, this is amazing. Like, there was 80,000 people in the stadium and I felt like I was jogging. I just felt so good. And I was like, it went exactly to plan. Like, it was like, if I scripted it out, it was like, this is weird. This is exactly how I would want this to go. But then like less than 48 hours later, it was like the complete opposite. And I just felt like I had a body experience where I was like, why aren't my legs working? Wow. And it was really weird. Like, I was struggling to even hurdle. Like, it was a fast race. There was a world record set in the race, but it was just a weird, yeah. I don't know what happened. I still kind of like was like, what? Because I had such a high and I just came to such a low from that. And it was just a weird one that I was like, yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you say like out of body experience. Are you processing what's happening when it's occurring at all?
Yeah, well, it's just like, you know, you go to do the first hurdle that I've been doing forever. And I was like, oh, that felt really weird. And then like everything felt really weird. And it's just, yeah, it was just one of those freaky kind of occasions where you're like, I'm not, like, you're not there. You're either there, but you're like, is this really the way this is going right now? And then I actually fell and it was just like, oh God.
Anything that can horrible. Go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah, it was really horrible. And it took me a long time to get over it. I was really, really like kind of shook from it because I couldn't really understand it, you know, and I was kind of hard on myself because like I'd put a lot of things together over the years. Every time I'd competed for Ireland, I got like incrementally better. Like the first time I was too nervous, the next time I was better, the next time I like got to finals, the next time I was at the World Championship final, I was always like on the right trajectory. So when it had gone so well the two nights before, to have like such a disappointment, it was really hard to process. And you know, sport is so risky, it really is. And like, you know, like that you were saying earlier, like one thing off or something and that's your chance. But there's always more races and all of that as well, but there is always a risk in sport. And I think that's why people like sport, because the unpredictability of it. And even though you think there's like favourites and sometimes the favourites win, there's, you know, we watch because we don't know what's going to happen. And that's the drama of it, you know what I mean? But it's hard when it goes against you, you know?
Yeah, we say that all the time in here. We'd be doing predictions for games coming up at the weekend and we've hour-long conversations about it, and then turns around and the complete opposite happens and it's like, oh, this is why we love this so much.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You kind of want to write a script, but then I was talking to someone the other day and we're like, there is no script and there isn't, you know what I mean? That's why we play the sport. That's why we do it. It's like, let's see what happens, you know?
And when you're trying to process that then, mm-hmm. we hear when people come home from Olympics, mm-hmm. even if everything has gone to plan for them, they find it really difficult, yeah. like a come down of sorts. But mm-hmm. if you've had the experience that you've had, it must have been so hard to process.
Yeah, it really was. I think like I couldn't really sleep for a few days after. It was weird. And then when I got back to Wicklow and like so many people had watched and tuned in and they were all wanting to talk to me about watching it, it was really weird because I wasn't sure if the person's going, oh my God, that was brilliant, or like, what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't know like what people were going to say. And like, I got a mix. People would be like, what happened? And then people were like, oh my God, it was brilliant, you know? So that was hard to like take in as well. But yeah, I think I kind of see it as like the Olympics is like you have tunnel vision for it and you kind of have to, because the way it's evolved to like elite performance now, it's like, if you don't have tunnel vision, you might not be even there. Do you know what I mean? But you kind of come out of that tunnel, even if it was positive or negative, and you're like, oh, life, yeah, what's up, what's down? And it kind of takes that focus away for a while. So I think it can be hard for people, if they've done well or if they haven't done well. But for me, it was definitely like a weird one. yeah.
And this all comes then almost to the creation of the Dare to Believe program. You were asked to speak at a school back in Wicklow about your Olympic experience.
Exactly, yeah. So because it kind of came at like the end of the summer, the Olympics was on and then the schools were all back in session and I got invited to talk in loads of schools around my area. Like at the time, like there was posters of me all over the towns and the village next door. So yeah, like I got so much support from there. So being asked to go into schools was really nice, but I felt like, you know, I went in there and they were all, yay, well done. But I kind of didn't want to just stand there and wave. Like, I wanted to be like, oh, sport has taught me so much. I've like gone on these adventures. This is all the lessons I've learned. But I wasn't really prepared. I was kind of like thrown in there, you know, still processing my own thing. And I remember coming out of one or two being like, oh, I feel like I could have given more there. Like, here I am, like, as an Olympian, like, as a default, you're seen as a role model, even if you don't feel like a role model. Yeah. You just are. It just comes with that title. And I just felt like, wow, I've probably missed a bit of an opportunity here to, you know, encourage kids to be in sports or like tell them about all the good things that you've learned, you know. So I thought after that, like, it would be really good to have like a system for helping athletes to kind of integrate their story, make sense of their story, and distill it down to like things that kids would want to hear about and make it exciting and bring the Olympics kind of into the classroom for them. And then that helps the athlete kind of give forward in their sport and like give back to their community and also process their own their own career at the same time. And so that's kind of why we started the Dare to Believe program, where we bring ambassadors into schools all over the country, and we have been doing that for the last like 6 or so years.
Yeah, so yeah, in a nutshell, the Dare to Believe program is athletes, Olympians, visiting schools, primary and secondary?
Yeah, primary and secondary, yeah. So we have over 100 Olympian and Paralympian visits every school year. But we have a demand of like 10x that. So like, I think in the last 2 years, we've had over 2,000 teachers apply for these 100 visits, you know. And so there's a real appetite from teachers who apply to have Olympians, Paralympians come in, talking about different sports, sharing their stories of like, because every Olympian has a story. Not every Olympian's a household name, but every Olympian has like gotten to a world-class level and they've done it through, you know, a lot of hard work and a lot of things that they've had to, you've earned a lot of wisdom, I think, along the way, you've had to forced into it. So it's just the teachers kind of realize that, and they apply because they want kids to see like somebody in their local area who's been able to have this world-class experience and bring that into their classroom. Do you know what I mean? And it's really nice, and the athletes get a lot out of it and the kids get a lot out of it. And it's been going really well.
And it's great for the athletes because being able to tell your story and just be separate from a sports person is so important for life after, like when the sport ends, which it always eventually will, and probably sooner than a lot of athletes would like. Yeah. So it feels like the kids gain so much because the Olympian comes in, but they're actually gaining a lot of experience.
That's right, yeah. And like you know, I kind of had the idea pretty soon after Beijing in 2008. And so for about 10 years, the idea of it kind of kept coming around and around, and I kind of kept piecing together more reasons why we needed to do it, and realizing that like public speaking as a skill is like one of the most hireable skills that people can have. And we're like, okay, it's hard for athletes to have these perfect part-time jobs or jobs that go along well with their Olympic sports. But if we can get their like public speaking skills up, that's one thing, you know, finding ways to help athletes feel empowered and broaden their identity. So they feel more confident, like retiring from sport, and they have those skills. And it's really has worked for a lot of the athletes on our list. They do feel like increase their skills. And, you know, there is that trajectory of like, they might start wherever they start. And some people are naturals, right? There's some people that they don't need any learning there. But there's a lot of people who, you know, like anything else, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I've seen people really thrive and really grow in their experience and their skills with that.
And how do the kids react? Because I have to say, I was up in Westport with last month where Sonia O'Sullivan visited Westport AC, and most of those kids wouldn't even have been born when Sonia won her last medal, and they just went crazy in a great way. Like, they couldn't get enough of her autographs, pictures, you know, running alongside her. But is it always that, you know, Sonia's at probably an icon level, but even if kids weren't familiar with the sport or the Olympian beforehand, mm-hmm. how do they react?
Yeah, no, they're great. You know, kids are brilliant, and especially the primary school kids are like really eager and very excitable, and you know, they have a great day with it and learn from the athletes, and they really tune into the stories as well, because part of the core program, the day-to-day program, is that the athlete shares their story and their journey, and there's a Q&A part at the end, and they're really tuned in to like what an athlete said, and they might call them up on something, and you know, so they like when the athletes are real and are not like, oh, it's all easy and it's all rosy, and they appreciate their realness, and our ambassadors are amazing. They're all so humble and grounded and just brilliant people, so it's like it's lovely to see them connect with the kids so well, and the kids love it. Yeah, we're always getting these little testimonials like best day ever in school and all that, but also then we work with the teenagers who are not as excitable, and yet they come back with these amazing questions as well, and they get a lot out of it as well. And we've had people like tell us that like they never did PE before, and then after hearing someone's talk they decided like to try PE because they were like, oh, PE is not for me, like I just, you know, whatever their experience had been through sport. And then we just bumped into them a few months later and they were like, now I do PE and I get medals and for doing PE and things like that. So we don't really always capture all of the kind of ripple effects of it, but I think overall we know that it's doing, you know, it's having a positive impact on the kids, and hearing the stories from the Olympians and then connecting with them, and yeah, just making them real and showing them what's possible, and even if it's not through sport, it just makes that connection of like broadening their mind to what is possible for them, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was fabulous that it doesn't have to be through sport, mm-hmm. and you had the on the website it says the joy of effort is one of the Olympic ethos, that's what you're trying to get the message out to the kids, that you don't have to be the superstar, mm-hmm. you don't even have to be into sport, but just
exactly
giving your best at whatever you're doing.
That's it. Yeah, it is. And that's what we've kind of tied the Olympian visits with, is this curriculum based on the Olympic values. And most people would think the Olympics, they think, okay, excellence has to be, and it is one of the values, but the other values are friendship, the other values are joy of effort, respect, healthy mind and body. And these are all things that like you learn through sports participation and being involved with sports at all levels, physical activity. So it was really nice to couple the visits with this curriculum that kids can learn about these other Olympic values and realize, yeah, this is what sport teaches. And what I love about the Olympic values is that the founder of the modern Olympic Games, Pierre de Coubertin, like, was naming these things like 150 years ago and said sport teaches these things and every kid, Olympism must be taught in schools. And here we are like, you know, 2026, whatever year it is, like 130 years later, and we're like, oh yeah, we need to get kids more physically active and sport teaches them so much. And you know, it's amazing that those values have stood the test of time, and a sport, we all know now how good sport is for kids, and it doesn't have to be an Olympic level, you know, you can enjoy, you know, basketball, you can enjoy running, you can do whatever it is, and that is a great reason to do it. It could be because your friend is doing it, like, oh, some people were like, oh, she only wants to do this thing because her friend's doing it, and I'm like, that's a perfect reason to start a sport, you know. We've loads of Olympians and Paralympians who say their friend told them to join athletics, that's why they did it, or whatever it is, and it's a perfect reason to do it. You know, you're having fun with your friend, you're moving your body, and you're enjoying yourself. Like, you're winning. Yep.
You know what I mean? And you mentioned Paralympians there as well. Yeah. They're part of the program, of course.
Yeah.
It must be extra important almost from a visibility point mm-hmm. of view for younger kids having Paralympians come in and speak to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And our Paralympians are amazing. and absolutely, I think people with physical disabilities we don't see enough of them. And yes, like when there is our kids with disabilities in a school, like we get emails all the time from teachers saying like, hey, can we get a Paralympian to our school? We just had a kid go through this experience or have this accident or whatever it is. And our Paralympians go in and they open up this whole other world to these kids, that like you don't have to stop being in sports, you don't have to stop being physically active, because we know kids with disabilities are more likely to drop out of sports and be less physically active. So, you know, they're showing them that this isn't the end, and hopefully you can find more sports and to look to find out where to find them, you know.
It must help their classmates as well view mm-hmm. them in a certain light, you know, yeah. just to be like,
yeah,
sports can be inclusive.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And our Paralympians will tell you stories about them just, you know, playing football or whatever it is, even if they're in a wheelchair or on crutches, or just that kind of spirit. Like if they've got that athletic spirit, that like they'll find a way to participate, and just really want to encourage that, because they benefit from it, you know, on lots of levels, right? Physically, mentally, socially. It's very good for people. So, yeah.
Has being involved with the program changed your relationship with your athletics career? Because, you know, you had the Olympics, mm-hmm. the disappointing final, and you had another like big deal in your career the year after at the European Indoor Championships.
Tell
the story better than me. Yeah.
About 6 months or so after the Olympics, I kind of got back into training. I spent some time down in Australia training with some of my teammates, and came back for the indoor season. And like, I was still like really fit from the Olympics. And so it was just kind of, you know, another level of fitness then. And I think I got an Irish record in the mile, but it's not a very frequently run distance over here. But still, it was an Irish record. So I was like happy about that. And then I qualified for the European indoors. I wasn't like one of the top, I probably wouldn't have been in the top of the field for that, but I made it through to the final. Like I scraped in like one, you know, the way sometimes those heats go, if you ever watch the way the athletics championships can be, some of the heats are like, getting through the heats is like really hard. Is basically what I can say, the way the tactics can be and the qualifying and things like that. It's just that is, you have to run it like that is your final until you have a final. You can't just be like, I'm a lock for the final. No one, anyone who does that, they're risking things. But I made it through. And then when I made it through, like that Murray Tracy was like, here, this is how you can get a medal. And I was just like, what? You know, I just made it through as the fastest qualifier. He kind of predicted the race and I was just ready for it, and I pulled all the things together for it, and I was mentally, physically ready, and the race really unfolded in a lovely way. And then like it was a blanket finish for the second, third and fourth places, because the winner was like 10 meters ahead. She was gone, a Russian athlete, and the rest of us were fighting for silver to bronze. And unfortunately I was like 0.0 something off the bronze that night. But I was still really proud. I was fourth and I was like, wow, I can't believe I was fourth. You know, I was delighted. I was like, this is the highest I've ever finished. And I was floating around just by myself being like, this is amazing and this is great. And I had other teammates like Dervla Rourke and Mary Cullen who had won medals, and they were like off with the media and buzzing or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm delighted for them. But like, I just felt like I had been successful. So that was a really positive performance. And then a couple of weeks after that, then I was like, oh, I'm so close to the medals, I need to just push. And then a couple of weeks after that, I started to get like a fatigue thing, and like, I don't know if you know many athletes, but your motivation can be higher than your body can handle. And I kind of hit that point where I was like, I'm so close, I just need to push a little more. And my body was like, you're tired, like you're not responding. But it's hard to do. It's hard to do less as an athlete.
Yeah,
especially when you're not like nothing's broken or you know what I mean. But I end up getting a fatigue thing after that, and then it kind of ended up being the end of my career, really, basically.
Wow.
And then I moved on, had a couple of kids at this point, and about 6 years later, I get it like a tweet at the time from somebody saying, well done, you got a bronze medal. And the winner of the race in Torino at the time had actually been cheating, and they found out that she, you know, 6 years later through the biological passport, that they were going to remove her medal and I was getting upgraded to bronze.
How do you feel when you get that news?
It was just so bizarre. Like, I'm out in the yard with like babies hanging out of me and just like, you know, playing in the dirt, whatever. And I come in and I'm like, I haven't run a race in a few years.
Yeah.
I'm getting a medal. And it was nice because like I'd come out of the sport being like, oh, I wish I'd gotten a medal to like show Irish kids that like we can get medals on these stages, you know? And I just felt like I was so inspired from Irish athletes doing that, that I just wanted to give that back, you know, because I'd gotten so much out of it intrinsically, but I'd never had that moment where I'm like, here, guys, see what you can do, you know? So that was just really validating that, like, I had gotten to that level and that performance was that level. But it was weird. It was like, it was a bit anticlimactic, you know what I mean?
But yeah. Do you get presented with it then?
Yeah, I got presented to it with it at the Athletics Ireland Awards or something.
But that was a bit, yeah, that in itself shows like, not a linear story, but
yeah.
So much that you can learn from it as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those ones you're just like, you just can't predict it.
Yeah, must feel great to have it though.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't. You know, it's one of those things. It's like everyone wants a medal, or they think, oh, when I win the gold medal, then I'll be happier. And then, you know, that's not true, really. It's just, but it does keep people going, and it is nice to. It is a good story at this point.
What's your relationship with running like now, or exercise in general?
Yeah.
It must be hard to transition from such a high functioning athlete to someone who doesn't train all the time.
Yeah, like I think you kind of stagger down, you know, it's like, oh, like you used to train 80 miles a week and then it's like, oh, I'll still do like, you know, 40 miles a week. And then I'll be like, you know, every year kind of goes less and less, but I still need to run every day. I love running. Like, I jog around with my dog. I don't wear a watch and I'm not on Strava.
Okay.
I don't care about paces. I don't put myself under any pressure. I just enjoy it. Yeah. And I just like, I just moved back to Wicklow after being in Rhode Island for like 20 something years. So I'm just enjoying being back in Wicklow and all the beautiful places there. And I'm coaching with kids and stuff now. My own kids are getting involved and part of the club in Inverdee and Wicklow Town there, and a club that's been running for 45 years. And
they won an award at the Team Ireland Olympic Awards.
Yeah, they did. Because for 45 years they operated out of the main coach, Noreen O'Reilly's boot of her car, and no facility. And just last year, when the other coaches helped work with the towns committee and stuff to get access to a field and build a running trail, so it's really good. Finally have like a space, and it's beautiful to have that, you know, instead of being on the side of the road in places.
Is there somewhere that you channel the competitive energy when you're not tracking runs or anything, because it must be so inherent to you as a person?
Yeah, no, it kind of is. I can't really play like board games with my kids or anything. I just have to like, I just lock it. I just end up being competitive. But I think like with my work, I feel like I channeled that, like, and it was really nice when we started Dare to Believe. I started with another fellow Providence College alumni from Waterford, actually, Roisin Jones, now used to be Quinn. She was a runner as well. And when we were talking, she had she'd moved into the corporate world and she'd moved back to Ireland after living around the world. But we talked about, she's like, what project are you working on? Because I was always doing different projects and stuff. And she's like, what are you doing now? And I was like, actually, you might be able to help with some things. And she was like, yeah, I can do budgets. I can do planning, all these things that like I didn't have experience with. And we worked together. And like, I feel like having those kind of projects is where I kind of get all like excited and done a lot of my motivation for them. Yeah, just kind of switched it into the Dare to Believe program in the last few years. And it's really nice to have like a team like Roisin Jones to like, you know, we have different styles and different skills and stuff. And it was really nice to have like a teammate like that and to build the program and then work with all the Olympians and Paralympians that we've worked with and have the support from the OFI and the team and our sponsors and stuff to really help us kind of grow the program to the level it's gotten. Like I think we've reached over like 600,000 kids in the last 5 or 6 years now, and the demand is really high for more visits and more more contact with the Olympians. So it's really fulfilling, and it's been my outlet for sure.
And if people are looking for resources about Dare to Believe, where can they find them?
Yeah, daretobelieve.ie.
As easy as that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be open for applications for the autumn and spring next year. So yeah, if teachers want to apply, or yeah, hopefully we're going to do more club visits as well. And we've got different things coming up. We've different like ways to interact with the program as well, not just through the visits. There's other resources there, and Olympic movement breaks and Olympian live webinars. And but hopefully in the road to LA, we'll have more in the kind of build up to the Olympic Games as well.
Roisin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks a million. Thanks for having me.